Dave Meltzer here on the playbook, and I sat down with Superman. Nope, wrong one, Baron Davis. He is a super entrepreneur as well as an all-star basketball player. And Baron talks about how he can handle so much. When he came from nothing, grew up with his grandmother, went to Crossroads, bust in, and made a huge success for himself as a basketball player, but more importantly, how he lives his life with the lens of productivity and accessibility. He is involved in so much, but never losing focus on what he values most, his family. You can learn about all of that and more with the new Superman, Baron Davis, on The Playbook. This is Entrepreneurs The Playbook, where each week I bring you some of the greatest athletes, celebrities, and entrepreneurs to talk about their personal and professional playbook to success and what made them champions on the field and in the boardroom. I'm your host and CEO of Sports One Marketing, David Meltzer.
This is Dave Meltzer, CEO of Sports One Marketing with Entrepreneurs The Playbook. And I will tell you, I've been an entrepreneur a long time and in sports a long time. Baron Davis, NBA All-Star, but I know you because every deal somehow that gets put in front of me, whether it's entertainment, digital, somehow Baron Davis's name comes up as early as Vitamin Water. Everybody's bragging that, oh, Baron Davis is involved. And you were still playing like with the Clippers and people would tell me, oh, Baron Davis is involved. Like, how many Baron Davises are there out there that play basketball? Because you are in every deal. It is amazing. How, you know, did you get this inspiration to be such a worldly entrepreneur?
For me, I think it was more so survival. When I stepped out and became my own agent, it forced me to represent myself, right? And I think a lot of times ignorance is bliss, right? And, you know, I was going into it knowing that there was a room full of education that I needed to learn, and opportunities would come, and I just had to be smart about taking the right opportunities and betting on myself. And I think, you know, as I continue to grow in basketball, you learn a lot from just the company you keep. You learn a lot from just the veterans that you're having conversation with, and, you know, you start to seek out the right people that can help you build things, do things, and, you know, some are wins, some are losses, but if you take the, you know, for me, it was like, look, this is my business school, I'm going to pay for business school, win or lose, this is, you know, my outcome should be greater as a person than what I've spent, you know, in this time and space, and I think that's why now I'm like, you know, sort of just, I've been able to connect the dots in different industries and find, you know, find where I fit, right? So maybe eight versions of me, but, you know, it's just the work that I've put in.
You know, it seems like to me, we share this, but you go from your gut a lot of the times, right? You know, I ran the most notable sports agency in the world. And when you decided to represent yourself, in my mind, I'm like, you know what he should do? Instead of representing himself, he should just find some agent that wants to represent him and have him do it for free and then learn and use that agent. But, you know, you really, what age did you start going from your gut? Because I know, like, deal flow-wise, sports-wise, you just get a feeling and you make those decisions with your gut.
I was, you know, 19, 20 years old. You know, when I was 19, I kind of had a feeling that, you know, I didn't understand the agent business and how it pertained to me. Part of it, you can say I was a spoiled kid who needed attention. But that's probably like a big reason. But, you know, I also took the time every summer to pay the dues to learn what an agent would do. And so all of my summer was spent in basketball and in the office. Office, go home, go to sleep, wake up, basketball, go to the office. So it was just like, you know, I had a job and an internship. And when that time came about, you know, when I was 20 years old, I was thinking about, you know, what I was going to get, what my percentage was, what the agent percentage was, and start to look at, like, yo, I can build my own business for myself because, you know, I don't know where I'm being benefited from by, you know, being in a pool with, you know, 40 or 50 guys.
Yeah, for sure.
And then there's pros and cons to that, right? You know, relationships and things like that that you have to go out and reestablish and build. But, you know, through basketball as a talent, I just think that people, they looked at me different and they start to respect me as I got, you know, older and older. because they start to see that, like, yo, like, he actually did something that nobody would have ever done. And now, like, we should all be doing that, right?
Of course. Now, you've always been a good student, and you grew up with your grandparents. You know, I'm a mama's boy. Seems like you're a grandma's boy.
Yep.
and my mom was tough on me.
Yeah.
And it seems like, you know, your grandma had high expectations off the basketball court for you. And it seems like that carried over as well. What were the best things? You know, because parenting, I have four kids.
Yeah.
You got kids. What's the best thing your grandmother taught you that you're carrying down being a parent yourself now?
Well, you got to have a plan B and a plan C. And she used to always say, you're not going to win every game, right? And you're not going to be able to play basketball for the rest of your life, but you can't use your brain. And your brain is more powerful than anything that you're going to be able to physically do. So, you know, don't let your brain go to waste. Actually, if you're going to play basketball, then, you know, how are you going to be the best on the court and then be a dum-dum in the classroom, right? It just don't add up. And so I think for her, it was the challenge of, you know, this may not work out. You still need your education to fall back on.
Were you scared of your grandma?
No, I was scared of failing my grandmother.
Yeah, letting her down.
Yeah. I wasn't afraid of her. I was afraid of letting her down. I was afraid of not being everything and anything that she could, you know, ever imagine, right? And so it was almost like I built like an unreachable goal, right? And, you know, that never wanting to fail, the fear of failing her made me just like keep trying and keep reaching and keep climbing.
In my upbringing, that's called Jewish guilt.
Mm-hmm.
That's what my mom used for me and my pop siblings. So out of all the things that you've accomplished, right, mm-hmm. on and off the court, philanthropy wise, as a father, you know, all the different things you do, what do you think your grandmother admires most of your achievements?
The fact that I'm a really good daddy.
Yeah. And what about you? What do you admire most about yourself?
And I'm a really good daddy.
Yeah,
like, you know, it's for me, I think the best work and the work you can do as an individual is, you know, raising a child. And so for me, it's like that's any type of legacy I want to make sure that I'm the best dad to my kids and they have every opportunity to realize themselves, right? And I think that's what my grandmother would want, and that's what she wanted for me. And, you know, I turned out all right.
Well, you're running a lot of businesses, you have your own venture fund, there's a variety mm-hmm. of things you're involved with. With millennials today, I see one of the best experiences or things that I put to use is I have three teenage daughters and an 8-year-old son. Well, unlike me, I grew up in Akron, Ohio. You know, may know a basketball player that was
brother-in-law from Akron.
I grew up with nothing, so I had a huge advantage in my life, right?
Yeah.
And I still do. It's like, I don't have fear of losing everything because I know what it's like.
Right.
I look at these millennials, a lot of them in entitlement, and then my own children, how do I empower them with the desire that I have, you know, to provide value, to be of service, to achieve as much as I can, which stems from this hunger.
Yeah.
How do you instill hunger into your kids when they have everything?
You have to create challenges, right? And I think that it's not that these millennials, they should feel entitled, right? We should have felt entitled, and maybe we would have been a little more responsible with our adulthood, right?
Right.
As far as like, you know, the 60s and the 70s and what those people went through, you know, who had no technology, who had to really fight, who had to really march. So, you know, it becomes, I think, our responsibility, right, to program, right, challenges.
Mm-hmm.
These kids are so smart. It's like the only reason why they're entitled, because everything is easy. They figure it out, right? And they have tools that we don't necessarily understand, right?
Yeah.
That are complicated to us.
Yeah.
And so it looks like that, you know, like when people say, I can't believe how, you know, influencers can make money on social media. It's like, dude, that's the most incredible thing. Somebody has figured out how to create their own TV and what works for their fans. So it's like, they're smart and super smart. And, you know, I think their entitlement comes from the fact that, you know, we're not creating enough challenges, right? We're just kind of like succumbing to whatever is, you know, whatever is new and hot and fresh. And so you have this world of venture, this world of content, and these world of, you know, millennials and next wave of cultural influential people. And we're just like scrubbing the surface,
right?
We're not actually, you know, creating the challenges or solving the issues or funding the companies that really deserve them. We're funding the things that are, you know, more so vanity, right? Or things that are already making money, knowing that they have no sustainability.
Right.
Speaking of transitioning from, you know, you did several things and you kind of call it your internship while you were playing, right? You're getting situational knowledge, experience, and relationship capital. And I think you're really wise for, you know, such a young entrepreneur, you're really wise to say, okay, surround myself with the right people and the right ideas. But there's one thing that you had that, and you still do, by the way, that I think a lot of athletes are missing, why they can't make the transition to be as successful off the court as, you know, on, and that's humility. It takes a lot of humility when everybody all day and night tell you, oh, you know, McDonald's All-American, you're great.
Yeah.
You know, and for no reason other than you're Baron Davis, people will just kowtow to you and, you know, want free meals, you want this.
Yeah.
But you maintain humility still today and ask for help for the things that you don't know of, even though a lot of athletes are like, well, they're going to think I'm not Superman because I don't know what the hell I'm doing. You've always taken the approach, hey, I don't know what the hell I'm doing. Can you help me?
Yeah. And I think it's there's a quality to being the person, you know, who's not the smartest person in the room, right? And I've figured out how to put myself in a room like that all the time, and not saying that I'm not the smartest person, but I'm aware of the capacity of the room, right? And where I am and where I need to go. So, you know, it's there's a gift and a quality to, you know, and I think it is humility, but at the same time, like, man, if you're gonna give me a free meal, I'm gonna say thank you, I'm gonna eat it, right?
Receivership,
exactly. But, you know, you just have to know who you are and who you are, right? Who you are on this court, what your responsibility is on this court, then what is the carryover from that and your responsibility in life? And then you establish who you are in life, right? And then what your responsibility is to yourself and your family. And so once you can actually separate the court person from the real person and the home person, you learn to appreciate what you're doing, and you appreciate the people who just want to, you know, like, who like love you for that, right? And so it stops you from buying into who that person is on the stage, and it allows you to say, hey, I get to be Hulk Hogan.
Yeah.
I get to be Michael Jackson, right? I get to be like anybody. I get to be any character that I've ever imagined as a kid on the court. I don't have to buy into that, right?
Yeah.
Right? That's just performance, right? And then as a person in life, you know, I think it's so different when people get to meet, you know, when they meet you and they're like, yo, like, you're kind of cool dude. And it's like, man, I know I look like an asshole.
And they both mean something.
Yeah.
I used to have to be the smartest one in the room because my siblings all went to the Ivy Leagues,
right?
And I was super competitive and insecure. So, but, you know, my philosophy now is always, if I'm the smartest one in the room, I'm in the wrong room.
Something wrong.
Right, exactly. I'm in the wrong room.
You've outgrown
room
the room. You just outgrown the room.
Yeah, exactly. And that's important. Now, you know who you are in the situations that you're put in. What's your why? Right? I like to get to real winners. They have a why. What's your why?
Problem solver.
Problem solver. And have you always been a problem solver?
Yep.
Yeah.
Problem solving and a survivalist. So, you know, just I would say throughout my childhood, like, I wouldn't be here if I didn't know how to survive, if I didn't know how to solve problems, if I didn't know how to create situations. A lot of, you know, what I learned in high school in math is proofs.
Yeah.
Right? So you can solve a problem. You can, you know, you can solve a problem backwards, right, through success, or you can build that problem to where you'll have a positive outcome. And so for me, I think that's my why, is to sit with people, figure out who they are, who they want to be, and then help them solve that problem. And whether it's connecting, you know, connecting somebody, spending time, investing, you know, that's a lot of our thesis, is to figure out how can we solve a problem together.
That's awesome. Now, I believe the, you know, I'm dealing with a lot of entrepreneurs, and they ask me for advice, and I'll say, first, key to business is stay in business, which is survivorship.
Yeah.
What advice do you give to entrepreneurs about surviving?
Be nimble. Be nimble. Like, don't go in overweight, you know, the responsibilities of your business and your company, you know, to thousands of people, hundreds of people, without really, like, being able to, you know every aspect and move. Because part of surviving is being able to move when a trend moves, right? Or being able to move as the industry is shifting, being able to downsize when the opportunity presents itself, being able to onboard. So I think that would be the most important thing when you're running a business, is, you know, don't be overweighted in talent, you know, just, you don't need to.
You know, I look at all the different things you're into, and it was doing due diligence on you, I learned even more. And a lot of people say to me, you know, like, with all the different variants things I'm doing, from TV shows to podcasts to the businesses I run, to the family I have, to the community, the philanthropy, like, you're really busy. Now, I look at what you're doing, and you take the same lens that I do. I think it's, you're very productive, but you're also something that most people aren't, which is accessible. And the accessibility is twofold. One, you're really accessible to others, you know, and especially your family.
Yeah.
But moreover, you're really good at accessing, you know, what you need, information, people, the answers, whatever it is. That productivity and accessibility gives you a different perspective.
For sure.
What do you think it is, perspective-wise, where, I should say, let me switch around. How do you view time? Because someone like you, I guarantee, does not look at time as a linear thing. There's enough time for everything.
Absolutely.
How do you do it?
You know, I preach, master the calendar.
Oh, my God. I call it being a student of your calendar,
right?
Master, tell me what that means to you.
I just took
this interview to the highest level.
Yeah, I think that is. I think if you're able to master the calendar, then you can work your way backwards, right? And nothing ever changes, right? So your routine is your routine. Worlds is worlds. Super Bowl is Super Bowl. Like, your holidays and your whole reset when the beginning of the year hits, people are like, oh my God, I'm gonna, like, reset my year. I'm having a wonderful year. You're already a month behind. Right? And so mastering the calendar is actually being a year ahead of schedule, because you already know what you're going to be doing next year on the same day.
And be nimble, like you said.
Yeah.
Right?
And
also, one of the best pieces of things is, I'm 50 now, right? I study my calendar all the time.
Yeah.
I master my calendar. I spend more time, what I call, in the white space of my calendar. I used to focus in on being productive and efficient with, you know, who I meet in person, emails, phone calls, social media, whatever it was. But then I started to go, wait a second, I'm not focused on the important stuff.
Yeah,
what
sure.
am I doing in my free time?
Yep.
You know, health-wise, family-wise, community-wise. Yeah.
That's the struggle, right? Yeah. That's the struggle. I think, you know, for me, lately I have been traveling all over the place. And then, you know, I think the good thing about basketball is I have the discipline to disappear, right?
Yeah.
So you know that in basketball, you can, like, be accessible as you want and, like, be a regular person, but come October, November, that's it. Like, you are a basketball player, that's all you do, and, you know, you don't have to deal with anybody because you have a schedule.
Right.
And so for me, it's like knowing that, you know, I keep my schedule according to the NBA season. So when the NBA season starts, that's when I start weaning off the accessibility and start getting into, you know, focus, routine, cleanse, And I think it makes, you know, being an athlete helps you be able to stop that, because a lot of times you can allow so much access that it'll just continue to, it'll become fake momentum, right? And so if you master the calendar, you'll know that no matter how much momentum you have, there'll be a breaking point and a stop because there's something else that you're preparing for.
Where do you keep your calendar? On your phone, paper calendar, all of the different
phone,
calendars? Do you have a paper assistant, one too?
I'm not that great.
Because I have calendars everywhere and I keep them
reconciled. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's in every office, a calendar in every office. Keep one in my head. I'm like watching the NBA calendar, the NFL calendar. I just keep all sports events and holidays like very visible.
That's awesome. All right, last question. Everything you have going on, you know, we always accelerate our careers when we're athletes. You know, it's just, you get to live for so much at such a young age. What legacy do you want to leave, though, when it's all said and done?
I would say that, you know, I would want people to look at me and say, like, yo, that's Baron Davis, and not, like, Baron Davis, the two-time NBA. You know what I mean? Whatever, however, awesome, like, right? You have to be introduced for somebody to respect you.
Yeah.
And then I love for, you know, people to be like, yo, he was pretty good at basketball. Like, he was pretty good at basketball. Like, I'd rather be known for, you know, my contributions to the world and what I can do, you know, on my brain. And then just be respected and, you know, have the respect for my peers, which I do,
yep,
for the career that I had or, you know, the time that I spent playing the game. So, you know, for me, it's just about creating that Baron Davis that's just me, you know? Yeah.
The Renaissance man, that's what I call you. Well, I certainly appreciate it, and you're well on your way to a great legacy and everything we can do to be of service, because this is a true entrepreneur. Baron Davis, basketball entrepreneur and philanthropist, great guy. Join us again on Entrepreneurs, The Playbook. Thank you so much for listening to The Playbook. Remember, you can catch us every Tuesday. Download it on your favorite platform. And please leave a review, comments, or even suggestions. I'm happy to hear them. Most importantly, be kind to your future self. Do more good deeds. Thanks so much. We'll catch you next time on The Playbook.